From KCRW, this is DNA Design and Architecture. I'm Frances Anderton. The aquarium in Long Beach gets political.
I've always believed aquariums can do serious things as long as we don't take ourselves too seriously. And so we have interactives and things for kids in this new wing. But it's a very serious message, and the public needs to understand that this is urgent that we deal with climate change.
Hear from Jerry Schubel, creator of Pacific Visions, coming up later in the show. But first, we're going to visit West LA. There, a grassy section of a public park has become contested space in a story that started with a tragedy and has erupted into a huge turf war, literally. The struggle involves class, access to public space, and materials, as in natural versus nylon. And it all came to a head at a town hall meeting last week.
First of all, for those of you who live in your big houses in Holmby Hills and you call our park a dirt lot, that's really a slap in the face. I'm sorry to tell you that.
Isn't the motto of Parks and Recs to build healthy communities through people, parks, and programs? Nowhere in the Parks and Recs mission statement does it say they are responsible for providing yards for neighbors as they may live in an apartment.
This park is for all of us and not specialized groups and needs to remain that way.
This is a beautiful funded project that will turn a poorly maintained field into a proper multi-purpose field for use by all in the community for a variety of activities.
DNA producer Avishai Altsy was at the meeting. Avishai, what are people getting so upset about?
I was surprised to see just how passionate people were about this issue. There were several hundred people that came to Westwood Recreation Center last Thursday evening to weigh in on a proposal to turn a grassy section of the center, and this is at Wilshire and Sepulveda in West LA, just south of Westwood, into a synthetic soccer field. There's already a small soccer field there, but this field would be regulation-sized, 180 feet by 300 feet. Opponents of the plan want to keep the field the way it is, natural and covered in grass. But the debate is, as you said, also about green space in LA and who gets access to it.
So where did this idea come from?
The proposal came from a couple named Nikki and Doug Mark. They are the parents of a 12-year-old boy, Tommy Mark, who tragically died in his sleep in April of last year. Tommy loved soccer. He played for the LA Galaxy's youth team, and he grew up playing at that park. His dad, Doug Mark, is an entertainment lawyer, and his mom, Nikki Mark, is the former executive director of the LA Football Club's academy. They'd already been working for several years to get the soccer field installed, and after their son died, it became Tommy's Field, a memorial for their son. They are well-connected, let's just say, in entertainment. They held a fundraiser concert at the Orpheum, headlined by Beck and Billie Eilish. They also did a comedy benefit at the Comedy Store with Tig Notaro and others. And these events, plus a crowdsourcing effort, raised $1.2 million to get the soccer field installed. I talked to the father of one of Tommy's friends from childhood. This is an attorney named Kirk Schenk.
Tommy was such a wonderful kid. He deserves to have something like this in his name that can live on for years and years, and that kids like him can learn soccer and actually play on a really good level field without rocks and during the droughts where there isn't unlevel playing field areas. And I think that there's a couple people who just like to go ahead and act as that thorn in the side of any progress.
And would you support this proposal even if it wasn't connected to Tommy and his memory?
Yeah, no, I think that it's important when the community can get the funding for great facilities like this and that the taxpayers don't have to pay for it. Why would we not accept that great opportunity?
At that meeting on Thursday, we also heard from soccer coaches and others in athletics talking about the importance of intramural sports for kids who spend a lot of time on their phones and in their own social bubbles. And they talked about the importance of sports in bringing kids from different groups together.
All of which makes very good sense, it seems. So why are people so upset by this proposal?
Part of it is because they are looking at Nikki Marks' connection to LA Football Club, and they're worried that the field is really just going to benefit private soccer clubs and not just any kid that wants to use the field. There's also concern about the synthetic turf itself versus grass, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, but also just the process. People are only hearing about this now. They feel blindsided. Here's something that resident Jamie Rook told me.
So the city and the donors have been working together for quite some time to develop this plan, and the community only just heard about this about 3 weeks ago. So we're trying to react in the time we have.
And there was a lot of anger directed at the Rec and Parks Department and at the Park Advisory Board for not seeking public input sooner. The other thing is just the need for open green space. They want to preserve that and not have it dictated in use by putting in a synthetic turf field. Here's Jim Lamb, another nearby resident.
I am completely in support of memorializing Tommy. It sounds like he was a young man who touched a lot of people. I just don't think that taking away our natural open space is the right way to do that.
For a resident of this neighborhood, is this really the only open space that you have?
Well, I live in an apartment with my family, my wife and four kids. We don't have a backyard. Most of the dwellings around here in the local neighborhood are apartments and condos, so we don't have backyards. This is the nearest green space. Otherwise, you got to go across the freeway. You got to go a couple miles up to UCLA. So this is it for us.
So as you said, this has been in the works for several years. How did the whole idea develop?
Well, Nikki Mark apparently approached the Department of Recreation and Parks with this idea back in 2016. And they were told that the idea of putting a synthetic field at that site had been discussed by the department and by Paul Koretz's city council office as early as 2013. So they said, sure, if you want to raise money to get this field built, go for it. And then here's what Nikki Mark said at the meeting.
For us, it was never about green space, open space versus synthetic turf. It was about a used field or a not used field. A field that has dogs typically running on it versus a field that has children and adults playing on it. And to us, that's what we want. We want to build a field for this community that honors Tommy, but it inspires schools to come and have their PE programs here during the day. It inspires them to have a flag football team after school and maybe participate in a league. It supports children who want to just come and play frisbee like they do on any intramural field. And it supports teams and leagues in the city who have a growing number of children that they cannot support because we simply do not have the field space.
Okay, so Nikki Mark says that the field currently isn't really used very much. Is that true?
Well, when I showed up just before the meeting on Thursday, there was a soccer game going on it. And the grass was very green because of all the rain we've had. At the meeting, you had people showing different pictures of the park taken from different times. And some of those pictures showed a very brown, unkempt field and some a lush green one. Here's Rebecca Kaufman. She raised three kids at this park.
I think it comes down to a choice. Either a dirt filled with holes that is green maybe 3 months out of 7 to 8 years, and or a field that can be used by the entire community. And not just for soccer.
Now, there's another issue that comes up when you discuss athletics fields, and that is the material that they're made of. Synthetic turf does worry some parents. There have been reports that fake turf is made up of crumbs of black rubber that can be carcinogenic. Was that an issue that came up?
I expected to hear more about that, and I did ask one of the supporters about it named Todd Hawkins.
There's a lot of different synthetics out there. Most of the newer ones are a lot healthier than the older petroleum-based ones, so I would hope that they're going to go with a better quality organic substance that is available for the turf fields. I would imagine this area, this day and age, they've taken that into consideration.
In fact, they have taken that into consideration, and Tom Gibson with the Parks Department said they plan to use a synthetic turf made of a nylon thatch that's non-allergenic and non-toxic, and then they'll also use an infill material called zeolite.
Zeolite is a natural mineral, quite light. It does not cause cancer. Our department has been using zeolite as the infill material on all of its synthetic fields we have constructed since September 2015. We have constructed 18 synthetic fields throughout the city since then and have many more in design and construction.
Tom Gibson is also making the case for synthetic turf as eco-friendly. Grass fields, he says, require constant maintenance, chemical fertilizers, and lots of water.
The all-American manicured grass lawn, which perhaps is iconic, is not so natural a surface as it appears. Fertilizing 2 to 4 times a year, the regular use of lawnmowers, and added labor to maintain a turf sports field makes grass lawns a poor choice.
Okay, so there's the eco case. There are kind of some other downsides to the fake turf, though. Certainly one hears of athletes getting quite bad injuries if they fall on this kind of turf. And also, if dogs pee on this turf, it can really get smelly and yucky. Was that an issue?
Well, dogs would not be allowed on the turf, which did have some dog owners upset, but there is a dog park at the center, so there is a place for the dogs. In terms of injuries, I've also heard that you are more likely to get injured on synthetic turf. On the other hand, the grassy field has rocks, it has gopher holes, so there's other possibilities of injury there too.
Especially in California, Southern California, where of course it turns into dirt, you know, by high summer.
Pretty quickly, yeah.
So really kind of fascinating struggle here, which seems to be around space. We have a very, very strong emotional connection to place. So what happens next?
Well, the Department of Rec and Parks is going to process the input from that meeting. They'll review it. There still needs to be an environmental review. And then it also needs to go to the city council for approval. So what Tom Gibson reiterated several times is this is very early in the process, and partly to deflect the criticism that the public's only really now hearing about this proposal.
Well, DNA producer Avishai Artsy, what an interesting story. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Francis.
You're listening to DNA. Coming up after this break, the Southland's most popular aquarium takes on global warming.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Back with DNA, I'm Frances Anderton. Summer has begun, and in readiness for the crowd, some LA tourist destinations have been adding some new attractions. One of them takes you into pure fantasy. Disneyland's new Star Wars Galaxy's Edge opens this weekend, and there you can fly the Millennium Falcon and join the resistance against the First Order. The other attraction asks you to get real. It's at the popular Aquarium of the Pacific in Long Beach, and visitors there are going to find a whole lot more than glass tanks filled with sea life. Here's the president and CEO, Jerry Schubel.
The whole idea was, since we were going to expand, instead of just expanding on the original concept of more tanks and more fish, why not add a new wing that provides context and perspective of what we humans are doing to all of those animals in the original building and to all the other animals on this earth. So that was the whole idea behind Pacific Visions. It lets the visitor explore pathways to alternative futures and to discover how we human beings are going to determine what that future will be for all life on Earth. And it will be our decisions about energy, food, and water, and it will be the decisions we make over the next couple of decades.
Schubel is an oceanographer. He grew up beside Lake Huron, and he saw how the freshwater lakes affected his family's clean drinking water supply. This grew into a deep and abiding interest in ocean acidification, climate change, and its impacts, and how to tell this story through art as a means for science and environmental communication. So he took on this overwhelmingly large topic, raised $53 million, and created Pacific Visions.
So it has serious messages, but they're delivered in a playful way. And I've always believed aquariums can do serious things as long as we don't take ourselves too seriously.
It starts with the building. Blue, bulbous, biomorphic, brings to mind the belly of the whale or perhaps a fat wave. It was designed by a San Francisco firm called EHDD, which also designed the earlier aquarium building. It is clad in panels of three-layered blue glass that change shade with the changing sky.
And the idea was to have a sort of facade that would mimic the moods of the ocean.
This is Faria Kader. She's the aquarium's architecture director.
So we wanted to use glass, but then we also had to make sure that it was a bird-friendly building, which meant that it can't be reflective. And so they experimented with lots of different glass types, textures, techniques in terms of combining different types of glasses together. And they came up with this. It's a triple laminated glass system. But when you come in the morning versus when you walk around the building versus when you're here on a cloudy day, the building always looks different, just like the ocean.
The aquarium is packed with visitors as usual. You can see at the end of the wavy-shaped lobby that room-high tank that has a diver swimming around with the fish. But now the first exhibition space, right after you enter, is Pacific Visions. You enter a dark room. The walls are covered in digital screens.
So this is the first gallery that you enter into Pacific Visions. This is the art gallery. So as you come closer over here, you can see that we've got projections on all the walls here that take people from two-minute sequences of coral environments into plankton environments. Up here, we have about 80 pieces of glass sculptures that mimic plankton shapes and textures. Then over here, we've got an installation that's more tactile. And this one is based on one of the things that was very important in Pacific Visions, and that is accessibility, particularly for the deaf and the blind. So for this particular one, you can actually touch the corals. And then you're also surrounded by the sounds of a coral environment. You know, you're hearing the clicking and the snapping sounds.
A lot of people think that the ocean is a quiet environment, and it's actually a very noisy environment, naturally. We humans have added a lot of noise, particularly since the end of World War II. Ships are the big factor, but also drilling for oil, exploring for oil, and so on. So we want people to understand something that most people aren't aware of, that it's a noisy place. We can reduce that, though. And we can also design quiet ships, and those are the big factors. A lot we can do to reduce the anthropogenic signal in the ocean.
That's so interesting, being that this is in Long Beach, where, of course, you have the port and the ships.
Yeah, but that's the perfect place then, because, you know, the whole idea, having an aquarium here with one of the two biggest ports in the world, and this is the great stretch of what's called the urban ocean from Santa Barbara to Tijuana. More people live along this stretch of coast than live in any entire state except Texas. We make multiple and conflicting uses of the ocean, but the ocean's in pretty good shape. Can we do better? Yes. And this port is trying hard to really reduce its impact.
So we continue the tour, and we go into a huge screening room. It's like an IMAX, but the screen wraps halfway around the theater, and there's another round screen that tilts up off of the floor. We sit down, and then starts the centerpiece of Pacific Visions, a film made by the aquarium team.
Our world ocean. It covers a vast amount of our planet's surface. It's the single most important component of Earth's life support system.
From there ensues a fast ride through the Anthropocene, the age of human dominance bringing achievement, destruction, and, if Jerry has anything to do with it, ways in which to set things right. In this film, you find that Jerry Schubel takes some provocative positions, not what you might expect from the head of an aquarium. A young woman narrates the story.
By 2050, we'll need 70% more to feed everyone. And we're already using too much of our land and our water. What if we could grow more animal protein with less impact on Earth?
It takes on aquaculture.
These underwater cages are cleaned by currents. Now imagine them scaled up. We could raise as much seafood as we currently catch in the entire world ocean using an area only the size of Lake Michigan.
It takes on alternative fuel sources, upflash images of wind farms, solar, biofuels, and a nuclear power station. And the film showcases images of the architecture of the future, unusual-looking towers that kind of remind you of Wakanda.
Smart buildings collect and store renewable energy. Green buildings take on a literal meaning as we grow fresh fruits and vegetables vertically in the city. close to home with a smaller footprint.
8 minutes later, the whirlwind of ideas comes to a close. But as we leave the theatre, Jerry amplifies on some of them. For example, the phrase that flashes on the screen at the end, Blue Revolution. This is a reference to the blue economy concept, and that's the idea that we should be using the oceans for economic growth, but do so in a way that still preserves the health of the ocean. Blue economy sectors include aquaculture or sustainable fish farming, offshore wind power, biotechnology and desalination. Jerry Schubel says other countries are far ahead of the US in developing their blue economies.
More than half of our country is under the sea, and we are not using it to benefit society the ways we can. And we know how to do it without adversely impacting important marine ecosystems. We can create this glorious future.
But when you said there's other places in the world that have blue economies, which places are those?
Most of the European countries that border the ocean. So if you look at the United Kingdom, if you look at any of the Scandinavian countries, they're doing it. Spain, we're a laggard.
And they're generating energy, or they're getting food in that concentrated way of harvesting fish?
Both. If you look at the kinds of aquaculture that's taking place in Norway, for example, and if you look at the large number of wind farms that are in the North Sea, so it's both of those.
Now we enter another dark room that they call the Culmination Gallery. It has more digital displays, maps showing projected population, a table where you press buttons, and a quiz on your knowledge of your water and energy use. The emphasis here is interactivity, says Faria Kader.
We've got a projection wall, so you can see it's just beautiful images in the background of the ocean, and there are all these bubbles traveling through. And if you get close to the bubbles and you gesture toward the bubbles, they pop open with information. And then we have bubbles even geared for, little children who can't read too well or just are more interested in images. So it's a way to integrate, people of all ages.
And this is where we give the call to action. So you will see there's a table for energy, one for food, and one for water, and there is the call to action to reduce the amount of energy we use, to move to clean sources of energy, to move away from eating beef at that table, eat more fruits and vegetables and more seafood if you want protein, and then there is one on water.
You also have a pretty interesting architectural vision for the future that comes at the end. Tell us about that.
It's interesting. Some places, like in Dubai and other places, they're beginning to move in this direction. Right now, 50% of the population lives in cities. The projection is by 2050, it will be 80%. So we're going to move vertically. Now, this is a good thing because, first of all, it leaves more space for nature. And if you look at the UN report, the biggest threat to biodiversity is we're taking up all of their space.
For anyone that isn't aware of the UN report on biodiversity and extinction of species, can you just summarize its findings?
The UN report is on the extinction of species, and the main conclusions are that we are on track to lose 1 million species by the end of this century, and much of it to take place in the next couple of decades. The number one is the modification of habitat. They state that 75% of the land has been modified for human uses and 66% of the ocean. That takes habitat away from biodiversity, causing an extinction. The second one was the over-extraction of life. And in the ocean, it's overfishing, and on land, it is also over-harvesting. And then the third was climate change and the rate of change. Now, long term, I think climate change is a big driver in the ocean because we're changing the temperature, we're changing the chemistry, and it's causing the mortality of coral reefs that support 25% of all the life in the ocean. So that came out on May 6th. I didn't know it was going to come out, but it was fabulous because we've been working on this wing for more than a decade, and all of those stories in that UN report are revealed right here.
Jerry Schubel has been dreaming of creating Pacific Vision since he arrived at the aquarium back in 2002. He's now 83 years old. But his exhibit is primarily designed for the next generations. And you find yourself wondering, will school kids on tours to the aquarium find all this entertaining? But then you remind yourself that it's the kids who are currently leading the global walkouts for action on climate change. And that's because in their view, the parents have dropped the ball. Well, students from nearby Lakewood High School who are on an environmental track got the first tour of Pacific Visions. We called their teacher, Stephanie Bauer, to find out their reaction.
Oh, I think my students enjoyed the visit tremendously. It not only reinforced what we've been teaching them in their 4 years of high school, but is now passing the torch to them and allowing them to take on this challenge that we have set up for them for the rest of their lives. They're the ones that are going to be the decision makers of our future.
Jerry Schubel has a lot of provocative ideas. He's throwing out ideas about what buildings should look like in the future. He's throwing out ideas for different energy sources. He even throws up an image of an energy source which is quite controversial, which is nuclear power. How did your students react to those kind of almost split-second provocations?
I think it gave them an opportunity to realize that the future is not set in stone, that they can be creative, they can think outside the box, they can take where we are now and expand where they want to go in the future and maybe build on what we've set for them, but also reach out and delve into different areas that we don't even know where it's going to go. But for them to be able to think outside the box, I think that's what's exciting.
That's Stephanie Bauer, teacher at Lakewood High School. Now, what about the visitors, however, to this tourist attraction who might not go there wanting to be reminded of their big, dirty global footprint? Well, we went back to the aquarium on Sunday. It was filled with families. We asked some of them what they thought of Pacific Visions.
My favorite part is the little animal thing where you press all the bubbles and they show you like all the cool stuff.
I like how interactive it is. I mean, I just learned a fact myself that, you know, the temperatures keep rising here and 90% of it goes into the ocean and that affects our ecosystem there. So it's just a good reminder for us to minimize our carbon footprint so we don't affect the ocean as well.
I think it's really cool. It's obviously family friendly, even though it's more for adults to know this stuff. And the interactive part kept them interested.
I have a 5- and 3-year-old, so it might be a little bit above their heads. My 5-year-old is pretty much infatuated with getting the stamps in the book. That's sort of his jam right here. That along with the peanut butter and jelly waffle, which they discontinued at the commissary. So that was kind of a disappointment. But we actually haven't really seen the whole thing yet. It looks beautiful. It might be for older kids.
But they're enjoying at least popping the bubbles on
the bubbles wall. The bubbles are cool. I don't know if they're actually reading the information once it comes up about coral bleaching and saving the world and things like that, but it looks beautiful.
I've got 2 4-year-olds here. Although they don't understand exactly what they're doing yet, they're having a blast, like just playing and with the touch screens. So far, it's been a great experience.
Is this the kind of exhibition you might expect to see in an aquarium?
No, I was really surprised, actually. I love that it's educational as well as kind of visually spectacular for the kids, so maybe they can learn something while they're, watching.
That was Lanisha Stamm. Before her, you heard Jack Stumpfall, Eric Reininger, Sarah Jerome and Zach Goody, all speaking to DNA's Avishai Artsy on Sunday. Now, the reviews you heard should please Jerry Schubel. As he told us at the outset, the goal of Pacific Visions is to deliver serious messages in a playful, even optimistic way.
We've tried hard not to make people feel guilty, or not very guilty. But, you know, it's like the Joseph Campbell power of myth. You drag people down into the depths of despair, and then a hero comes along and saves them. In this case, all of us created this situation, so we all are responsible for creating this urgent situation. And the only way that we're going to get out of it is if we all become heroes. And so this is a story about, if you want to become a hero, these are some of the things to do.
That's Jerry Schubel, president and CEO of the Aquarium of the Pacific in Long Beach. It has just opened its new wing called Pacific Visions. I'm Frances Anderton. You've been listening to DNA. Avishai Artsy produced this episode with a final mix by Ray Guana. Special thanks to Laura Kondarajian. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week.